Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
On behalf of the Tattered Cover, it's a delightful pleasure to welcome you all tonight for this great signing. This is Signe's, she's an editor, which many of you may know, but this is her first attempt into the book format, so it's a big change for her. An editor in Psychology Today had written an article, and this is, I think, from the things that I was going to say, sums it up the best, which is to be in Psychology Today and be recommended is great. He calls her book a groundbreaking offering written by a woman who gets on her quest as a starts on her quest as a skeptic, only to find her way into a land of enchantment that changes her life forever. This is an incredibly brave effort by a wonderful new writer, and I highly recommend this book. I believe it holds the possibility to heal our latent desperation of adults of being disconnected from the things that really matter to our hearts and our souls. But let's welcome her and hear what her journey was like directly from her.
Hello. First of all, let me just adjust this a little bit. First of all, I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. It's a really amazing thing to be able to go to a city where you only know a few people, and to have a room full of people show up is really heartwarming. So thank you for coming. So I was sitting today trying to figure out what I was going to read to you all today. And I always pick out different, I've been on tour for a couple of weeks now, and you know, I always pick out different readings depending on where I'm going to be and who I'm going to be talking to. And for some reason today, Tattered Cover was the hardest for me, because as a book editor, I've had a crush on this bookstore for the longest time. And so I felt a lot of pressure. And then I sort of sat and I was sitting in my in-law's living room, and I was looking out at the mountains, and I just thought, well, I'll just have to do what I've been doing all along, which is just to be myself. And so I'm going to read to you two different segments, one from when the book begins and then one from the middle. This book was written in a time capsule when I first got interested in this idea of what else exists beyond human perception. I was working as an editor at Random House, and my father had just passed away, and it was a really difficult time to try to get over that death. I only had about a week off from work, and then I was back in my cubicle, you know, working for three other editors, and I really didn't get a chance to process or grieve or, and at the same time, I didn't really know what I thought about life after death or God or religion or angels or fairies or any of this stuff. And there was this woman who lived in my apartment building in the Upper West Side of Manhattan named Raven Keyes, who I had become friends with. And she was this very spiritual, very magical lady who teaches meditation in New York. And she said to me one day that she loved coming over to my apartment because my apartment was actually filled with fairies, which I thought was pretty wild. And so I said to her at the time, you know, that's kind of shocking because I live in this, you know, 500 square foot studio apartment. And she started to explain to me that, you know, she had never left her belief in fairies. Many of us believe in magical things as we're little kids. And yet as we get older, we tend to relegate those beliefs to the nursery. And I found that I was really moved by Raven's ability to maintain her sense of wonder. And I found that I really mourned the loss of my own. So I started to, as a journalist, and sort of an optimistic skeptic interview, look for adults in various places that were connected to the fairy world and ask them about their beliefs. And I figured that for me, if I could find a way to see or have some sort of experience with the fairy world, which I think a lot of us think that that's pretty outlandish, to me that would prove that there was something else, that there was possibly everything else. So to me, this search became a kind of a doorway. And so I'd like to read you the opening of the book, which is where I began. I wake up every morning with a sense of purpose. I am a tastemaker. As a book editor in New York City, I think about it constantly. What do people want to read? What will they want to read in 1 year? What about two? Mostly, I acquire books that entertain women, that engulf them. When I think about the reader, I think about you. I buy books that I hope will make you smile, make you believe in the magic of love at first sight. I buy books that I hope will heal your heartbreak. I read all the time, big, thick manuscripts. It's part of the job. Each night, I take home big chunks of pages in an extra shoulder bag. I read on the treadmill. I read while I'm eating my takeout dinner. I read before bed, propped up with a pillow, my glasses slipping down toward the tip of my nose. I'm beginning to wonder if carrying all the paper is the reason that my right shoulder feels like it's filled with marbles. In the morning, I get up and I flip on the radio, NPR, and a cup of coffee. I'm always running late. I can never figure out what to wear. I'm almost 28 years old, and I'm always trying to look older. I hate blazers and button-up shirts. I hate walking the streets of New York in high heels. The men gawk, and the concrete wears them down until the metal pokes out the bottom. I lock the door and say goodbye to the cat, hoping that for her today, there will be pigeons. I read on the subway, pressed up against a big man whose breath smells like rotten eggs and stale coffee. Next to me is a fat, middle-aged stockbroker staring over the top of his Wall Street Journal at the gap between the taut fabric of a blonde woman's skirt. He has a slim gold wedding band on, and I wonder if the woman he gave it to believed in love at first sight. The train shoots underground and the faces around me look ashen in the yellow lights. I close my eyes and for a moment, everything, the lights, the people, the rapidly receding subway walls slip away and I'm rushing out into the bright sunshine. I walk up a long dune that leads to the beach where I can hear the sound of the ocean. It sounds like a sigh. I open my eyes to see people looking back. Has she fallen asleep? I focus again on the pages in front of me. I tell myself, all I want is to heal some heartbreak. Upstairs in the glass-walled building, I flick on the desk lamp in my third-floor interior office. Glancing at my calendar, my eyes find the familiar photo pinned near the top of my bulletin board. Have you ever looked at a photo so much that you can't even truly see it anymore? I examine it again, trying to break it down into pieces. I see a man who looks far older than his 60 years, walking down a winding set of stone stairs. At his feet, a small brown and white dog is captured mid-movement, and he has turned to face the camera above him, his eyes gazing back at mine. The expression he wears is one of faux surprise. He hardly ever plays it straight for a camera. I know this because neither do I. In a moment, he'll call out, "Hey, you coming?" I see a flash of fabric breeze past my office door. "Good morning, Signe," my boss says. "Good morning to you," I say brightly. I flick on my computer and glance at the persistent blinking light on my phone. "You have 5 new messages." I reach for the phone with one hand and my coffee with the other. Lately, I think my face hurts from smiling. "Hi, this is Signe Pike returning a call. I'm going to heal your heartbreak because I have no idea how to heal my own." So that's really where I began in my quest for something to believe in. And as I met wacky people, there was a woman who made fairy houses in her basement in upstate New York, who was really fabulous. I met a psychic medium in Syracuse, New York, and I had a really odd experience with what could have very possibly been a hairy troll in a Mexican bathroom. So after those things happened, I put it together as a book proposal, and I was lucky enough to sell it. And so then I had to go on my real journey, which was to the United Kingdom, to where all of this fairy folklore really traces its roots back to. And the section that I'm going to read you is about a third of the way through the book. And Raven Keyes, you'll remember I mentioned her earlier, has agreed to come with me to Glastonbury, England, which is a very magical place where the Arthurian legends are still sort of roiling beneath the surface of that town. And so Raven has decided that she's going to try and help me get in touch with the fairy world. And so we have to go into this garden in the middle of the night and do this ceremony that Raven has convinced me that it will work and that we will definitely see some fairies if we do this. So we are headed out right now into the garden. My heart was beating in my throat as we stepped into the night. Raven took my hand and we made our way up the path and through the gate toward the waterfall of the chalice well, following the sound of the clear running water. Maybe normal people would have thought that wandering through a deserted garden in the middle of the night was awesome. Me, not so much. I felt like there was somebody behind me breathing down my neck in the dark. I felt like there were 1,000 eyes in the trees. I felt like we were intruders, out of our element and unwelcome. But Raven, oblivious to it all, carried on blithely. The breeze played with my hair as we emerged on the meadow, and it was a relief to see the open evening sky. "Where should we go?" Raven whispered. "How about we sit under that old tree?" I gestured. It had caught my attention earlier that day because it just looked as one would imagine a fairy tree should look. So then we're sitting in this, we do the ceremony, which you can read about in the book. It's kind of long, so I've chopped it out for your abridged version tonight. We do the ceremony, and then we're sitting in this circle that we've created in the dark, back to back, and we're waiting. And, you know, no one's really done fairy hunting before, at least not in this type of way, so there's really no rules on what you do. So we're just kind of sitting there. Suddenly, something began to move in the bushes at the edge of the clearing. Raven was facing the open slope of the meadow, but I was facing a dense, tall crop of grasses with thick hedges beyond. I froze. I could hear the rustling. Shuffle, shuffle. Shuffle, shuffle. It couldn't be more than 10 feet away from me by the sound of it. It seemed to be moving matter-of-factly, and I could hear it getting closer. I tried to keep calm, but I felt my chest tightening. I reached back and clutched Raven's arms, linking them in mine. I could tell her ears were keenly perked as well, but she was radiating excitement. Shuffle, shuffle. I couldn't see what it was, but something was coming toward me. My legs felt vulnerable, my bare feet so close to the edge of the circle, to the edge of the grass. Any moment it was going to appear. Was it some kind of animal? I really didn't want to freak out. This was where it counted. But some sort of Homer Simpson-like noise issued itself from my mouth. "No," I said, pulling my legs into my chest, just as I thought I was going to have to shout, "Stop!" As soon as it had come, it was gone. My heart was clamoring inside my chest. "Raven, I did not like that. I did not like that at all." She patted my arm, completely unfazed. "Do you want to go in?" "Man, I was such a sissy." "No," I said reluctantly. "But can we switch places? I mean, come on. It was only natural that the brazen sorceress with the magical powers should be facing the scary part of the hill, right?" We'd been sitting quietly for a few minutes when I was startled by Raven letting out a loud gasp. It scared the living hell out of me. "What? What is it?" I whispered urgently. "Oh my God," she said, her voice filled with wonder. "Signe, do you see it?" "No. See what?" "They're everywhere." She sounded shocked, almost beyond words. "What? What are you seeing?" I'm seeing little lights everywhere. "You're not seeing this?" I could feel her moving her head from side to side in disbelief. "No," I whispered fiercely. "I'm not seeing anything." My eyes strained in the darkness. I looked over her shoulder and saw nothing but black. Signe," she said seriously. "They are definitely here. I cannot believe you're not seeing this. They're zooming right over your head." "Of course they were. They were probably thumbing their noses at me while performing the opener from Riverdance on my forehead." But I thought a moment. What if this was really happening for her? Why couldn't I see it? "Tell me what you're seeing," I whispered, my brow knit in concentration. "No, wait, don't tell me. I don't want to have any impressions for my mind to work with." But Raven wasn't listening. She was laughing, laughing in delight, and looking around her in utter amazement. "Oh," she whispered reverently, "thank you. Thank you." I rolled my eyes. I didn't want to accuse her of making this up, and I certainly didn't want to disrespect her. But how could I know if what she was claiming to experience was real? If there was nothing there, it meant that I couldn't trust my friend's accounts. Every instinct in me since I'd first met her had told me that Raven was the real deal. But what if there was something there? Why wasn't I able to see it? I was, once again, being snubbed by the fairies. So that's it. Of course, I wasn't actually snubbed by the fairies the entire time. It wouldn't have made for quite as an entertaining book, so I got lucky on that count. Now, I did leave you, that last passage left a little bit, it was a little bit sad because I was being snubbed by the fairies, so I would like to share with you the first kind of experience that I had, and it was actually after a transformative day. This is only taking place one day after the last segment that I read to you. I'm still in the Chalice Well Gardens with Raven, and we've gone out. This is our last night there. This is our last attempt. I'm pretty sure that I won't see anything, but I'm feeling different this night as I undergo this experience. The garden felt cozy and secure. Raven had given me her cloak, and I walked through the night garden barefoot and hooded in green, a woman not completely myself, yet more myself than I'd ever been. As we reached the fairy tree, we sat once more back to back. I gazed out at the night around me, but there was no fear, just curiosity. It radiated from me from the very center of my chest, and I felt timeless. Last night, when I'd heard the shuffling noise, I'd been afraid, and my fear had broken the moment. Tonight, I could feel the land almost singing to the stars. I could feel the trees gently twisting in the wind, the bushes rustling as though they were papered silver in the moonlight. Behind me, Raven was humming something soft and delicate. It was then that I began to notice tiny pinpoints of lights from town blinking in the bushes. I watched them as they blinked, twinkled, in and out, but after a moment, it dawned on me. I couldn't be seeing lights from town. I shook my head in confusion. I was looking at a thick hedgerow with an orchard on the other side, meaning beyond the hedge was nothing but the slope of earth and grass. If I were seeing lights from the city, I reasoned, I'd be able to move my head and the light would stay fixed, possibly be blocked by leaves when gazing from another perspective. Then again, Glastonbury, England is hardly a glittering metropolis. Even as I reasoned, even as I puzzled, I watched a blue pinpoint of light move slowly at first, then zip into the trees above us. There were dozens of them now, delicate dots of light glowing within the dense blackness, one deep blue, another orange like fire, many in bright white. They began to move, to come alive, it seemed, and I let out a small gasp in disbelief. Those were no city lights. "Are you seeing them?" Raven whispered. I hardly wanted to move my lips, afraid my voice would put a stop to whatever was happening around us. "Yes," I managed. As I marveled, the lights moved around us, glittering and dancing in the night, and as I sat there, beneath that ancient tree, my spine resting against the spine of the priestess, I began to cry. All I could do was sit there and acknowledge that the implications of this moment could change the course of my life forever. I shook my head in amazement, leaning back into the cool night grass, and gave myself over to it. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.